Hey family, it's Dr. Casperson today. Thanks for joining me. This is an Instagram Live I did with a good friend of mine, Dr. Kira Barr, who's an integrative dermatologist. She's really starting to focus on the perimenopause and menopause transition. We talk about so many things to help with anxiety. And as we know, if we have anxiety, depression, we're go, go, going, we're living in our cortisol brain, we're just doing sympathetic activation all the time, it's really bad for our sex lives. We have to drop into our body, relax, get into the parasympathetic to really enjoy great sex. So I think discussing perimenopause, menopause, anxiety, depression is so important because it's really part of a healthy mind and body, which aren't two separate things. Mind, body, it's one thing. And in order to have great sex, we have to be in the moment. We have to be relaxed. We have to not be thinking about tomorrow. We have to get our cortisol down so we can really enjoy pleasure. So I think these conversations, although not very specific to actual penis and vagina sexual intercourse and heterosexual people, is super important in talking about healthy, happy sex lives and our health in general, because we want to live healthy because we're going to be here for a long time, God willing. So we spent about a third of our lives post-menopause. So we really, really need to keep this conversation going. Hope you guys enjoy. Love you so much. Welcome to You Are Not Broken, the only podcast that combines science, medicine, and psychology to re-educate your brain and help you live your best love life. And I'm your host, board-certified female urologist, Dr. Casperson. All right, everybody. It is Kelly coming to you live on Instagram. I'll probably be recording this on my podcast, too. So hello, podcast listeners. I hope you guys have all had a chance to listen to this week's episode, which is episode 111, which is with Dr. Jim Simon. He's actually a OB-GYN reproductive endocrinologist who has devoted his career to figuring out the truth about menopause and hormones. So it's amazing and fitting because we just had Menopause Awareness Day, which I think should be a year or at least a month. So I'm going to call on Dr. Barr because we are doing an Instagram Live today. So here we go. We're going to talk about menopause and anxiety. Everybody's two favorite topics. Oh, thank you. You like the podcast. Thank you so much. I love it. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm literally like just got done with a workout so everybody can see me with like, this is what real life looks like. Makeup free.
That was pretty good.
Makeup free. Yeah, totally. We're having a major storm right now with like tons of wind. It's taking all the leaves off the trees. Yeah. Because you're in South Washington.
So I'm south of Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
South Washington. Maybe you guys don't call yourselves South Washingtonians.
I haven't lived here long enough to really get the lingo. I don't know if people do consider themselves that or not.
I call myself a Southern Canadian. Because I'm like 20 miles from the border, but I don't think, no, most people don't call themselves that. Okay, so introduce yourself for the people watching and tell us what you're all about.
Yeah, so my name is Dr. Kira Barr by training. I'm a dual board certified dermatologist, dermatopathologist. I've been working with menopause women with prescribing bioidentical hormones, right? Because women want to come to me thinking they want to look better. Really, they want to be feeling better. And despite balancing hormones on paper, the one thing that kept coming up over and over again is the heightened level of stress, anxiety, and overwhelm. That it didn't matter what prescription, what pill, what anything that they were given. And so the focus of my work has become really supporting women from that emotional, mental well-being as they're making this transition through menopause.
Awesome. So what you're saying is let's break that down. Do hormones help, or like even if you're on hormones, you can still have anxiety, right?
100%.
Okay.
100%. And I think this is so important and fascinating. First of all, if you're experiencing anxiety and depression in menopause, you're not alone. And this is your theme, right? You're not broken. You're not broken. No. There's just some imbalances that you may have, or you may need a different type of support. And I think it's so important that when we talk about symptoms of menopause, like hot flashes, mood swings, insomnia, brain fog, memory lapses, this is not just like an ovary problem, right? This right? Our hormones affect our brains in such a significant way.
Totally. And I think, you know, just the whole, like, it comes down to sleep for me. Like, if you're sleeping poorly, everything else gets messed up. Like, your sex drive, definitely, your sex life, your energy for your day, your, like, spark, right? Like, sleep is so important, and sleep disruption is huge in the menopause transition. And doesn't just go away when, like, hot flashes go away for people.
Absolutely. And just to take it one step further, I was talking about, you know, sleep is not just huge for mood and, you know, just productivity, all the things, but in terms of your skin, right? We talk about, like, beauty sleep, and beauty sleep is real. Sleep is, like, the most rejuvenative, free thing that we can do for ourselves. Our body literally repairs at night. And unfortunately, as our hormones are shifting and diminishing in menopause, that ability to get high quality sleep can be impaired. But it's not just the menopause transition itself that's playing a role.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think anxiety and depression is big for, like, any age group. Why are we focusing on the menopause transition? Is it because, like, they've been neglected in general, right? Like, when I think, like, anxiety, I think of, like, the 23-year-old college student. Talk to us about why this is so important in midlife.
I think it's important for several different reasons. Number one, in midlife, like, we have a lot of responsibilities, right? When we're in our 20s, it's just us, and we're just focused on us. Like, we don't have much else to take care of. But in midlife, you might have a family that you're primarily responsible for. You have a career. You might be sandwiched between your kids and your aging parents. There's a lot of moving parts in midlife. And trying to balance and juggle all those balls in the air can feel overwhelming at times. Add in the diminishment, the natural decline of hormones. And for some of us, it's a bit more abrupt if there's a surgical intervention, hysterectomy, oophorectomy, that throws you into that transition a little sooner. It can be compounded. Mm-hmm. And then add in, like, pandemic and life challenge, you know, things outside of ourselves that are not in our control.
Yeah, and, well, I think in society's expectations of, like, perfect women can handle it all, right? Like, we have just so much, like, crap expectations thrown on us too. So, like, we feel even worse about not being able to handle it.
100%. And I think for so many women, you know, the patriarchal norms and just this idea that our worth is tied to how much we can do. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard when you feel exhausted and you feel like you're losing your mind in menopause. You're forgetting things and you don't feel like you can produce more. It can just add to that sense of stress and anxiety.
I recently saw this data looking at midlife women dropping out of the workforce because of menopause symptoms. And it's to the tune of, like, millions and billions of dollars. Because women think it's them, like, and I think they don't think there's anything that can be done or, like, things to do. So they drop out of the workforce. And, like, that's huge financial impact to these women and their families and, like, society in general.
Absolutely. I think this is a huge problem. And I know, at least in Europe, in the UK especially, there really are significant efforts being made to have these conversations about women in the workplace and how can we support women. What are the things that we can put in place to help women? Because we do make up a large portion of the workforce. We have so much value to add, and we need that support. You know, it isn't that there's something necessarily wrong with us. We may be struggling, but it doesn't mean that we have to suffer unnecessarily. So I think it's so incredibly important that we bring these types of conversations to the forefront.
I think you're right. I think it was a British publication that had talked about the dollars to the workforce. In some ways, I think the UK is ahead of America in menopause care. I think as a central, you know, they're more centralized healthcare, like, they're really starting to focus on it. They're really starting to come up with guidelines. So it's impressive. I'm part of a couple of groups now that are kind of based over there. And, like, it's impressive what they're doing. So, you know, certainly America is not at the forefront of menopause care.
No.
I'll put that, that's how kindly I'll put that.
No, although it is interesting, like, menopause is a hot topic these days, right? Like, it's Menopause Awareness Month, but I am being, you know, contacted by companies on a regular basis that are focusing now on menopause, which is so exciting and also interesting in terms of the timing and why these things are happening now. But unfortunately, I have nothing against skincare products and procedures and all of that, but like the beauty industry is a $500 billion plus industry, which is really just hammering home the point that there is something quote unquote wrong with you that needs to be camouflaged, covered up, fixed, moisturized, hydrated, you know, all the things, rather than addressing like what can we actually be doing from the inside out? How can we support our hormones and this transition without always having to think we have to look outside ourselves to the tune of, you know, the weight loss industry, $78 billion a year, $49 billion a year on just cosmetics, not even including aesthetic procedures. But the average American woman is spending upwards of $250,000 on her appearance in her lifetime. And yet, 96% of us don't feel beautiful, right? Like, these are crazy statistics. Add
wow.
on to that, as we're heading into mid-age, right, in our 40s, 50s, like, until this point, I feel like this is a beautiful time in history. There weren't products specifically geared toward where, at least I am in my life, we were invisible. Like, we, you know, it's like, you need to anti-age. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not aging in reverse. I'm not Benjamin Button. Like, I am getting older. Like, this shit is real. Like, this train is going forward.
Right. Yeah, to think otherwise is, you know, arguing with reality. So let's talk to the woman who's literally having like panic attacks. She's like waking up at 2 a.m. with anxiety. Where can we start?
Yeah, I think it all circles back to what's happening in her day-to-day life. Like, in that moment, number one, I think you just stop and pause in that moment. If you're waking up in the middle of the night, you're in your bed, and just as best you can, you know, remind yourself you're safe. You're okay. And I'm putting, like, you can't see it, but putting my hands on my chest, this idea of, like, a soothing touch. I think it's really important. Our body is so intuitive. You might not even realize that you're holding yourself, or maybe you're rubbing the side of your thigh or hand on your heart. Like, just bringing yourself back into that moment and reminding yourself, no matter what's happening, you're safe. Like, within your body, you are safe.
And I think that's it's such an important point, because we do not get taught how to self-soothe, and it's a powerhouse skill.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating as a physician, right? I've been in medicine for over 20 years now. I had no clue. I wasn't taught any of this stuff. I had to learn the hard way when my health, you know, fell apart, and I started learning, taking courses, working with mentors, and really diving deep into mind-body medicine, because I realized I was completely disconnected. I was just living in my head, completely cut off from my body, and forgetting all the basic pathophysiology of how our hormones work.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. It's a mind-body-skin connection.
Yeah. I mean, I was just reading something about, like, how we separated the mind from the body and how Western medicine has completely taken that. Oh, I was reading, have you read When the Body Says No by Gabor Mate?
I have not. No.
Oh, highly recommend.
Some of his other stuff, but not that.
It's really good. It's not brand new, but he really talks about like the history of separating the mind from the body and now how Western medicine, like to the point that Western medicine's like nothing that you think or do in the mind has any effect on the body. And he's like, over and over and over again, we know that's not true, but we're not, he says it's like a slippery slope of like, people worry we're going to tell people that they caused their own disease or something. If we say like the way you think and the way you are processing trauma and the way it like, so he's very careful to like explain that all, but it's a fascinating book because Western medicine is so separate, mind, body.
Totally. I mean, we are subspecialists, are we not? Right? Like, you're a urologist, like, as if our kidneys, our ureter, like, our female reproductive is separate somehow from our bones and our skin as a dermatologist, right? From our, like, we have siloed our bodies, and yet, you know, that whole, like, the thigh bone is connected to the hip bone. Like, we're all, it's all connected. It's
totally
crazy.
Can we go into a little bit, if you are able, the evolutionary, like, we have anxiety. I have to think for some point, anxiety helps keep the humans alive and, like, safe in the cave, right? Like, anxiety is not totally bad. It's just when it's, like, unchecked and, like, running amok, is it then kind of paralyzing? Can you kind of talk about, like, why we have anxiety and how it might a little bit of it be useful? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does make sense. I mean, evolutionarily, we were born for survival, right? So some level of anxiety and stress actually is necessary. I mean, if you look towards nature and just look at environmental stresses, like, because when we think of stress also, we think of emotional and mental stress, but stress can come in so many different forms. Like, I keep looking out to the left because that's where my window is. But there's, like, you know, ultraviolet radiation, there's air pollution, there's the people you spend time with, there's, you know, emails in your inbox. Like, there's all different sorts of stressors, and we call that our exposome. But we need some level of stress to keep us out of harm's way and as a catalyst to move forward, right, to grow and evolve and thrive. So to a certain extent, we want a little bit of stress in our lives. And it's not stress in and of itself. It's our response to stress, what we're making that stress mean for us that creates the anxiety and the overwhelm that can be paralyzing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of experts in the anxiety world, they never promise, like, I'll make it so you never have anxiety again. Like, they never do that. The point is, you're going to have your anxiety, you're going to see it, you're going to manage it, you're going to live with it. You're not going to let it stop you from living this amazing life. Is that kind of in line with how you think?
Absolutely. Listen, I am tightly wound. I know this. I've even done my genetics. Like, I was born for this. Like, I stress. Like, and learning that, number one, it's almost a flipping relief to be like, huh, okay, this is just part of who I am. Like, this is just part of being a human being. I'm going to feel stressed. And in some ways, that's, like, liberating.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to have some stress. We're supposed to be worried. We don't want to be completely numbed out. But there are opportunities to learn skills, to learn how to manage how we can modulate this stress response to work for our biology rather than against us. So that anxiety and the stress, like, it's instead of driving the car, I always think, like, you hand over the, normally we'd hand over the keys. Stress, anxiety, they're driving the car. But once you learn tools that you can use to help regulate how you respond to stress, you're back in the driver's seat, and anxiety is just in the passenger seat, and ideally in the back seat, and eventually it might be in the trunk, right?
Yeah, and you can still say hi to it, and it still might, like, knock, and you might still be able to hear it. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's when you get curious about it is, like, recognizing the patterns. And now it's almost laughable. Like, when I get a couple of emails in my inbox that I haven't answered, boom, there's my anxiety. There's my time scarcity. Like, and it's just to the point now of, like, oh, well, I didn't need to open my email if I didn't want that to happen in my life. Cause that's what always, and it's like, instead of, like, I'm anxious every day, it's like looking for actually those triggers to see them and to be like, oh, of course that's how you respond. It's how you always respond to that. Does that make sense? Like, where people, they're able to see it, and then it kind of loses a little bit of its power.
100%. And I think that's the key to all of this. It's really awareness and being able to tune more into what your triggers are. I think for me, what my downfall was is I was just constantly pushing. I was completely disconnected and not appreciating the impact that the constant stress, it's like a bucket. And I was just filling it and never draining it because I didn't have the resources to know, number one, that was important because I didn't understand how the stress was affecting my physiology, which I can share a little bit more about. And then, so it was just overflowing. And then I was just trying to, like, put the water back in the bucket. Like, I just, you know, and learning gradually over time, like, just like you, okay, maybe it's the emails. And so maybe now I learn to set boundaries and I turn off the notifications. I put in my calendar that I'm only going to address emails at certain times of the day so I can make sure I'm doing some self-care first, right? I always, in my calendar, I actually have pleasure first. I add things in to start my day off with something that's going to bring a little light and joy to my life so that when I go to that inbox, like, I'm ready for it. And limiting the time versus, so it's an idea of, like, responding to your inbox rather than constantly reacting to it.
Yes, how you respond. You have a choice in how you respond. You don't always have to react. And I think we always have to go back to sex because this is what it's about. But don't check your email right before you've planned to have sex with your partner.
Another thing, like, is plan to have sex with your partner, right? Just like anything else, like, make the date. So I think that's such an important point. Yeah.
Such an important point. But if you're, and I think, you know, let's get into it more because I think my mantra for the end of this year is, like, getting more and more into my parasympathetic nervous system and, like, living there. Like, I love my parasympathetic nervous system. And that is, like, a new discovery because you don't realize how much you're just living in sympathetic all the time in the modern world.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much there. Yeah, I mean, the parasympathetic system. I mean, our rest, relaxation. I mean, who doesn't want to feel good, right? And even when you're at work or you are addressing your emails, like, getting into a frame of mind where you can do it from a place of fun. Like, you can have fun with it, right? It's like, ooh, what can I get out of this experience? How can I make this work for me? Because you're going to have to do the work anyway.
Yeah.
So I think finding ways to turn on that parasympathetic nervous system is so key. And especially, you know, shifting back to the sex hormones and why this is so much more prevalent. Anxiety is so much more prevalent for women going through the menopause transition, if you think about how estrogen and progesterone work, right? So estrogen has such an impact on the brain for cognition.
Oh, I lost your sound. Did you have a call? Oh, there you go. You're back.
Like, I did, yeah.
We're good.
I have a dentist appointment tomorrow, so they were just calling to remind me.
Taking care of herself, people.
Exactly. And normally that would have freaked me out. Like, oh my God, you just breathe through it. I'm like, it's just part of being human. Phone calls are going to come in. Things aren't going to go according to plan.
Yep.
There it is.
Yep. And then progesterone. So progesterone is actually a very relaxing hormone, right? It's what relaxes our bowels. It helps us relax the uterus. It, you know, and so it helps us sleep. And so for progesterone to go away, we kind of, I think even in the hormone replacement world, we kind of poo-poo progesterone. It kind of is the one that, if anything causes breast cancer, it's you know, our non-bioidentical progesterone. So it kind of gets poo-pooed a little bit. But I think especially for people who have trouble sleeping, progesterone can be very useful. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. And I think progesterone is probably the hormone that needs to be initiated early on. And for many women, starting in their mid to late 30s even, because, and I'm not saying just willy-nilly give it, but I know for myself especially, had I gone to a clinician who really listened to the symptoms I was having in my late 30s, more anxiety, I was having trouble sleeping, my periods were getting really wonky. And essentially, now that I know more about hormonal health, like, my progesterone was in the tank. And I think giving progesterone supplementation early on would have mitigated a lot of the symptoms and ultimately, in my opinion, would have made a difference in my choosing to have a hysterectomy down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So, is that for heavy periods? Are you talking about?
Yeah. So it turns out I had so much pathology once that uterus was removed. I was like, oh my God. And it all came back to stress. So here's where this is why this is so important. Yes, as we are maturing and progesterone is going down and it is that great calmer, because progesterone's going down, you know, the effect of GABA on the brain is going to go down. Estrogen also is playing a role in the brain. So many of the symptoms that we experience in menopause, take hot flashes, for instance. So your hypothalamus is where, you know, your brain, it's one of the centers that helps regulate body temperature. And estrogen plays a role in helping to regulate that effect, right? It plays a role in helping to modulate the production of hormones and the function of the hypothalamus. So as estrogen is going down, the ability to regulate temperature is going down. So that's where hot flashes. So hot flashes isn't just like, you know, an ovarian thing. It really is a brain thing. Now let's look at stress. How does stress affect the brain? We think about the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, that hypothalamus, right? So there's an inverse relationship between your stress hormone cortisol and your sex hormones. Your body is going to prioritize survival, your stress response, and cultivating all the resources it can get to create that hormone, that stress hormone, cortisol, so that you are in that sympathetic drive.
Totally. Yeah. I think for so many women and their sex drive and their sex life is like, they're just like, go, go, go. It's on my to-do list. Let's get it done. Let's go. And they don't enjoy it at all. And it's like, you've got to get it off the schedule, it, plan for it, prioritize it, but get it off of that like sympathetic oriented, like to-do and really learn how to two things, drop into the body and then parasympathetic. And I, you know, it perplexed me for a long time because there's a lot of data saying that women who work out, who are physically fit, who move their body have better sex. And I'm like, I'll tell you, after a raging, like hard workout, I am not interested in sex at all. And I'm like, that's because I am super sympathetic after a huge workout. And of course I'm not interested in sex. And then like you do a yoga or a movement workout or something that really gets you parasympathetic. You're like, yeah, this could be real good right now. So it's like paying attention to even to the type of exercise and where it puts you in like that arousal versus relaxation.
100%. And even though this isn't directly related, all I was going to say about the HPA axis in stress is your body's prioritizing cortisol, estrogen is going down. So naturally hormones are declining in estrogen. And then that HPG, that hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, is being shut down. So basically, stress is just eating up all whatever available estrogen your body's producing, so it's shutting it down. So important why managing your stress response and getting into that parasympathetic response is so key. But to your point about like working out, that's good for you, right? That you want those feel-good hormones and endorphins and all the other benefits that exercise can bring. So maybe your foreplay is actually a little 20-minute massage, either a self-massage or getting your partner to do that. And now, this is actually from the dermatology literature, but I just was at an integrative derm conference, so it's on my mind, in terms of actually helping with atopic dermatitis and such. But they found, especially in, you know, bringing in a little bit of Ayurveda in here, using oils like jojoba oil or sunflower oil, especially in menopause, hello, dry skin, sunflower seed oil is actually so hydrating and has been shown to work very well for skin. Grapeseed oil, jojoba oil, even sesame oil. So just as a plug, if you want to experiment with some different oils, if you're looking for, you know, food in your pantry for massage oils with your partner, those work. And then 20 minutes worth of massage has been shown to really make a significant difference in resetting that nervous system, release of oxytocin, those feel-good hormones. And then as you're shifting, so you get the best of both worlds, you've exercised, a little touch, and then you can move right in and help you be more present, because that's where great sex comes from, right? It's being in the moment. Part of where, you know, we orgasm, all of it, the enjoyment and pleasure from sex comes from actually being right there in it. But most of the time we're worried about either the size of our thighs, if our boobs are hanging low, all the things, or the pile of laundry, right? We're just not in the moment. But bringing yourself into the moment, either self-massage, massage with your partner first, as your lead-in to actually engaging in intimate moments.
Amazing tips. Yeah, and I think the thing about like CrossFit style, like lifting weight exercises, like maybe not sex right after that because you're still so sympathetically activated. But what that style of exercise is going to do is it's going to relax you for later on, right? Because you will have gotten out all that energy and you are going to be a lot more relaxed. And so it's still very good for you, just maybe not like right after it.
And I think also, just as you had mentioned earlier, just being so in tune with your body, because exercise is good. More is not better. And for some of us, and I say this from experience, I used to run ultramarathons thinking more is better. And I wound up running myself literally into the ground. And my cortisol levels were so high, which is what tanked my sex hormone levels. In addition to, I was heading into perimenopause. So any resources that I had left were really getting consumed by my body just trying to deal with the stress that I was putting upon it. So I think it's so important. And I think, especially in midlife, as women, looking at beauty norms and how we should look, the size of our thighs, all of these things, it puts a lot of extra pressures on us to think that we need to diet, deprive ourselves, exercise more. And it's actually doing us a disservice, making our menopausal symptoms worse, driving up our stress response, and just it's adding to the problem. It's not helping. So I
Totally.
think exercise is great, but tune into your own body of what feels good and do exercise that brings joy, like not punishing yourself for what you ate, but celebrating what your body can do.
Totally. Yeah. They've done studies on this. So especially when we're talking about anxiety and depression, right? Like moving our body, exercise is very therapeutic. It's very good for us to the equivalency of antidepressant medications in some studies. But when you're looking at sex, so women who exercise have better sex lives up to a point, exactly what you're saying, and they have a study on this. If you're over 6 hours, this is just one study, but if you're over 6 hours a week, your sex life goes down again. And they think maybe these people are doing it more for other reasons, or they've got body image issues more than the women who are exercising left. Like it's literally a bell-shaped curve of like poor sex life, greater sex life drops off again. Exactly to your point. They've done research on this. So more is not better. Let's talk about breathing. Because I'm a surgeon, I'm an 8 Enneagram. And so like oh, I'm only coming into this like yeah, breathing doesn't work for me, but it wouldn't work for me. And now that I'm getting into breathing, I'm like, God darn it, it works for me too. So like I came into breathing like fighting. Not
I hear
fighting,
you.
maybe not fight, resisting breathing. But can you talk about breath work and anxiety a little bit?
Absolutely. So first of all, we are breathing all the time, right? We would be dead if we weren't breathing. And I think the key is most of us are just not paying attention to how we are breathing. A lot of times when we are feeling stressed or anxious or overwhelmed, we may actually be holding our breath. We may be breathing much more shallow or just breathing in our chest rather than a full belly breath. So, breathing is probably the fastest way to shift yourself from that fight or flight to that relax and, rest and repair response. It's something that you can do anytime, anywhere, and no one will actually know that you're having a moment for yourself, a self-care moment, which is why it's so powerful. You could be literally standing in front of, on stage in front of people, and you're just taking, a few breaths, and it doesn't take much. There's breath work techniques, all sorts of breath work techniques that can last, for hours, but literally taking a breath. There's some like coherent breathing or box breathing, inhaling for 3 seconds, holding it, exhaling for 3 seconds, and repeating that for a cycle of three. That literally will take you maybe a minute. I guarantee you will feel your body just take a collective sigh.
Yeah, it's insane.
And then there's
It
chaotic breathing. I
works.
mean, there's all sorts of breathing. If you are not the kind, like as a surgeon, sorry, I did not mean to cut you off, but there are some of us who it's really hard to sit still and breathe, right? Because you're so agitated, and that's where other forms of breathing, and I teach other methodologies where you don't have to be just sitting and like, because that doesn't feel right for some people. So
Yeah, and just to, for the people who are just joining, is like our ability to self-soothe is not taught, right? And a lot of what we're talking about is like moving the body, breathing, being aware of your triggers for anxiety, knowing that you are your own best solution to some of your biggest problems. Before we wrap it up, I gotta plug alcohol, man. I just saw a woman. Menopause transition, horrible anxiety, not sleeping, drinks red wine every single night. And I'm like, you gotta stop the wine, man. You gotta stop the alcohol. And like, people don't understand the role of alcohol and anxiety. Can you explain that for us?
I think the role of alcohol is multifactorial, especially in terms of symptoms of menopause. We were talking about sleep earlier, and one of the biggest disruptors of sleep for many women is hot flashes. That alcohol is going to, in terms of mess with your hormones, right? We were talking about cortisol, stress hormone. The sugar in the alcohol and the alcohol itself, it's like causing a spike in your insulin and the blood sugar roller coaster you're going to go on, and that is going to create these motor instability. Like, you're going to have more hot flashes. It's going to mess with your sleep, which is going to affect your mood, which is going to affect your productivity. I mean, it is a vicious cycle. Your whole
It's a
circadian
vicious
rhythm,
cycle. And then
your
you're
circadian
anxious and
rhythm just.
stressed, so you solve it with alcohol.
So, that caffeine wine diet. So you're not getting sleep at night because the alcohol disrupted your sleep. So then you're pounding the coffee in the morning. Then you're crashing in the afternoon, right? Because your cortisol, your insulin, like everything is all wonky. You're grabbing for the 3 p.m. sugar fix. So you're crashing again. So then you think that you need to, like, you're revved up and you need to unwind with the wine at night, and it just starts all over again. So it's a matter of, again, paying attention to what your triggers are and being able to not beat yourself up. First of all, listen, this shit is hard. I'm not saying that it's easy. But as you so eloquently said, like, we are our best solution to our problems. We cannot stop the clock in terms of we are heading towards perimenopause, postmenopause. Our hormones are naturally declining. That being said, there is so much that we can do to support the hormonal balance that we do have, that we are capable of still producing, and it all comes down to regulating that stress response. Alcohol is a stressor on your system in terms of liver detoxification and your estrogens being metabolized in your liver and, not moving your bowel. I mean, it goes on and on, and it starts with literally just tuning in and just giving yourself a break, number one, just acknowledging like this is hard and it's okay that it's hard.
Yeah, I love it. And I think, my job of like, I'm not telling everybody to just like get off the sauce immediately, but I want people to examine their relationship with it, if only for a personal growth tool of like, why aren't we told that this thing is completely bad for us? We're told it's completely good for us, right? But if we're asking our liver to do a totally unnecessary job in clearing this alcohol out of our body, it can't do all the other things that we need it to do, let alone the brain and all the other things that are affected by alcohol. And going back to derm, skin, your skin looks way better when you don't drink.
Oh my gosh, can we even talk? Just again, like, yes, yes, and yes. And because, especially the impact that the sugar in those drinks that we're having totally destroys our skin, increasing accelerated glycation end products, which glom onto your collagen and your elastin, making them more friable, contributing to your fine lines and wrinkles. And then the sleep issue. I mean, if you are not sleeping, this is when your skin repairs itself. That balance between cortisol, which is supposed to go down at night, and your melatonin that's supposed to go up, it's totally mishmash, and your cortisol levels are staying high, and cortisol is the enemy of your skin.
Yes,
This
totally.
just skin barrier makes it dry, irritated, breaks down your collagen, prevents new collagen from forming for so many reasons, right? Learning how to listen, we can't get rid of stress, we want some stress, but how to learn how to manage your individualized stressors is the key to skin health for sure, but your overall health and well-being so you can actually feel good. We live a third of our life in a hormone deficient state. Like, we've got a lot of life to live.
Totally. Well, let's summarize for people, just so people are like, did they actually give us any tips? Because I think we talked about a lot. Prioritize sleep, prioritize discovering what your stressors are. Pay attention to the sympathetic, dropping into the parasympathetic. I'd cut out the alcohol. Anxiety, know that it's very common, and the goal is not to get rid of it, but it's to see it, manage it, not let it own your life. What else do we talk about? Those are amazing tips. Breathing.
We talked about breath work. We talked about the power of soothing self-touch. Exercise, but not over-exercising, learning what your body does. The power of self-massage as foreplay to get you in the mood and switch you into parasympathetic, or just for your own just overall enjoyment. So many things. But I think the key thing is understanding stress is a normal part of life. And it's so important to have tools in your toolbox to help you learn how to modulate your own stress response so that you don't feel overwhelmed and anxious all the time, that you are back in the driver's seat and you can put anxiety next to you. It's along for the ride.
I love it. Tell us what you have coming up as far as your courses and your teaching.
Yeah, so right on target with this, I am launching, it's called Midlife Freedom, and it's a very intimate group of women to help teach all of these tools that can equip you to navigate the anxiety, the overwhelm, stress that so many women are experiencing at this time of life. Because what I have found, number one, menopause is still a taboo topic in many areas. Women don't necessarily know what to expect, and it's that unknown that's creating the anxiety. So to be able to create open communication about the menopause experience, to connect in community, and be able to also learn the skills and tools so that you can feel more calm and relaxed and be able to enjoy this time of life. I mean, imagine how much more time and energy you would have, right? And if you didn't have to worry about all the other things.
I love it. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm here on Instagram at Dr. Kira Barr and my website, drkirabarr.com. And then there's more information about the program. You can always send me a message. But on my website, it's drkirabarr.com, and then it's Midlife Freedom if people want to learn more about it.
Awesome. I'm going to pick on you. Did you ever get your podcast up and running?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I recorded it. I recorded my intro.
You got your sign up.
Episode. I saw my sign up, but I have not launched it. So thank you for calling me out, because that is something that at the forefront.
That's what good girlfriends do, right? They call each other out. Push them forward.
Call me out of my shit.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to meet with me today. This was great.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.